to the panel on RNZ National. Zoe, George and Liam here join me this afternoon, and thank you for tuning in. Sally writes, Wallace, I sewed my own school shirts for summer and winter and the summer tunic from Form 1 to Form 7. Back in the day, the tunic fabric and pattern was readily available to purchase. The winter uniform, that heavy gym frock, was handed down or bought second or third hand. We were all in that situation and nobody blinked that our uniforms were not new. And regarding school pools, Tony says, Wallace, $130 for a key for the whole of summer for our country school pool. It's beautiful, it's clean, and been so good over this hot summer. Great for the locals and raises much needed funds for the school. Oh, very cool. Thank you, Tony. 4:07, the panel. Now, not all masks are created equal, and if you're wearing just a few floral scraps of fabric around your mouth and chin, you may want to upgrade your approach. Infectious diseases experts are urging people to wear a robust mask, and that's one that is battle ready in the fight against an onslaught of Omicron. And is your mask actually helping or is it hurting? And is it time for a national mask strategy? Dr. Lucy Telford-Barnard is a senior research fellow in public health at the University of Otago. Is with us now. Dr. Barnard, kia ora.
Yeah.
Are masks more important than ever when it comes to this variant?
They really are. So masks are a key thing that the general public can do to help to prevent the spread of Omicron when it arrives and Delta that's already here. You know, we've got a really good approach to vaccination here, and vaccination is your first line of defence, but we know that Omicron can break through vaccination more easily than Delta, so that makes those masks even more important.
So, Dr. Barnard, explain to us, what is the most effective mask, and the most effective mask for now, for 2022?
So the most effective mask that you can get is a P2 or an N95 that is really well fitted to your face. That's the best that a general member of the public can achieve themselves. For health professionals, they'll be able to do a kind of whole fit test thing, but even just getting one that you feel fits well, that you can feel has got a good seal, is going to do a really good job for the general public.
And can you explain a little bit more why the P2 and N95 masks are better? What makes them so good? Why do they work better?
The first thing is they have been tested to meet a standard, so you absolutely know what you're getting. And what you're getting is something that will filter out those really small, fine particles that are in that aerosol that you're breathing. And also, which has a really good fit and for most people, and which has an electrostatic coating on the surface, which helps to repel particles as well. So that's what you're getting with that P2 N95.
I'll get our panellists to jump in very soon, Dr. Barnard, but one reason we got on the panel, because I had overheard some chatter, some conversation, and not just once or twice, but a few times, that masks are, at the end of the day, a little bit of a waste of time. In the scheme of things, they don't do a lot of good, but you're here to tell us that it's completely wrong.
No, masks absolutely make a difference. You know, and there's a nice little chart that you can see where if both people are not wearing masks, then the transmission can happen within even 15 minutes. If you're both wearing just your average cloth mask, that extends out to about 25 minutes. Once you put on surgicals, you're getting out to maybe an hour. And if you've got a really well-fitted P2 or N95, then that can stretch out to even 6.5 hours before you transmit between people if you're both wearing them. So it really does make a difference. And, you know, and on both sides of the equation, you know, the person wearing it and the person that they're with.
Gosh, extraordinary. 50 minutes to 6.5 hours. Let's get our panellists to jump in here. Zoe.
Yeah, when should we be wearing these masks the most? Obviously when we go inside, but if we're going to, let's say, the cricket and we're sitting on the embankment and we're in an outdoor area, do we have to wear the mask then too?
Yeah, at the cricket, that's a really interesting example, because generally I would say in an outdoor setting, if there aren't many people around, then you don't need to be wearing a mask. But in a situation where there are a lot of people around and you are sharing that air, although you've got excellent ventilation on the in an outside space, there is still the potential for anything that you're breathing out to pass on to the people next to you. So in that kind of space, I think some kind of face covering is going to be showing concern for the people around you, particularly if it's a really busy match. If you haven't got so many people around you, they're further away, then you can feel a bit more confident about taking that mask off.
All right. Liam?
What do you make of the argument that some people have raised about cloth masks, despite having some value, creating a little bit of a false sense of security? I mean, especially if people aren't washing them between use, and they're just, keeping them in their car and putting them on when they run in. And the idea that, unless we have some sort of serious strategy to upgrade the masks that are available to people and to make them more readily and cheaply available, getting those N95s and equivalents, that the cloth masking may be counterproductive, even because it gives people that false sense of security about what they can and can't do and how close they can be to each other.
Yeah, there's two parts to that question, really, isn't there? Yes, we absolutely need better support for people to be able to access better masks, and we do need, really, I think at this stage, the government to step in and assist in making sure that those P2s, N95s, are accessible to everyone. However, what I'm really kind of pushing at this stage is, previously I've been saying, do what you can, whatever you can do, you're trying, you're doing your best. And now I'm saying, whatever you have been doing, look at that and see if you can make that better. So while we wait for more accessibility for those P2s and N95s, look at what we're doing and what we can do to increase that. So it's not
saying
that... Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, no, yeah. Should I be shaving my beard off to get a better fit? should we be going to that level of...
Good point.
You will get a better fit without a beard. maybe there's something else that you can do that will give you a better fit before that. I don't want to be weighing in on people's facial hair at this point.
Yeah, we've got quite a bit of response from this, actually, Lucy. So people are very clearly interested and want to do the right thing here. So if I get a couple of questions here through the text here, can you talk about the K95 masks?
Yeah, so the KN95, that's a Chinese standard. And the challenge with the KN95s is that there's not necessarily that same level of oversight on the testing. So there's a lot of self-certification for KN95. And for a lot of members of the public, they won't have necessarily the background to be able to check and verify that what they're buying is at the level that it needs to be to provide that same level of protection as an N95 or a P2. If they are verified, then yes, they do provide that same level of protection. If you can still get a good fit, they tend to have ear ties rather than straps around the back of the head. So that's another challenge with them.
Another one, Mal asks, what about a filter in a cloth mask? How good are they?
Yeah, if the filter is good, then a good filter in a well-fitting cloth mask can definitely be a good option too.
Anyway. So the other issue here, Lucy, is your mask needs to be an excellent filter, as you mentioned, but it also needs to fit really well. Can you talk a bit about the fitting, how to tie around? Some people do the double ties and the twist ties, all that type of thing.
Yeah, so there's a nifty little trick that I do with my surgical masks where you get the ear loops and you tie a knot right at the base, and then you tuck the pleats underneath that when it goes on your face. And for me, with a small face, that makes it fit my face well. And if you look this up on YouTube, there's lots of videos that will show you how to do it. It's a bit hard to describe on the radio. But that for a lot of people will give a better fit than just a loose surgical. With the N95s, you shouldn't need to do that. The straps should be adjustable at the back, and you should be able to adjust them to fit your face well.
Right. What about reuse of the N95s? I mean, how if you buy a pack of five from Bunnings or whatever, can you reuse them a few times? Can you sterilize them?
Yeah.
UV light or something?
You absolutely can reuse them. But what I've seen recommended is if you get seven of them, or even five if on the outside, and you rotate them, so you let them sit somewhere so they can dry out and any viral particles on them can die. You can put them on again 5 to 7 days later and they can still be reused. When they get to the stage where the straps or the ties aren't fitting you so well, but maybe they've lost a bit of their stretch, that's when you need to replace them. Or if they're so grubby that you don't really want to have them on anymore.
Right. Lucy, quite a few people actually asking, desperately seeking an N95 mask. No one seems to sell them. How and where can we get one? You may not be the person to answer that question, Lucy, but clearly...
Unfortunately, no. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that question. And again, that's really a space where I think that the government could come in and, as part of the national mask strategy, could help make them more available.
So on that, is it time for us, 2022, to have a national mask strategy?
Very much so. We have had slow information about masks over the course of the pandemic. And as you can tell from the questions that are coming in, people really do want good information about when to wear masks, what sorts of masks to wear when, and about the quality of the masks that they're buying. You know, if you go out and buy a cloth mask, you've got no idea what level of filtration that's providing. And those things all need to be brought in under a mask strategy so people know where to get that information and know what they're looking at when they get a mask, whether it's going to meet the needs that they have.
Lovely to have you on the program, Lucy. I appreciate it. Thank you. That is Dr. Lucy Telfer-Barnard, who's a senior research fellow in public health at Otago University, who is making it clear right there that masks are indeed a big part of our future with Omicron coming, and that it is time for a national mask strategy. David Ngahere says, I purchased online one of those KN95 masks from St. John. They reckon they are fit for purpose. But what are you seeing around you, Zoe? Are people wearing masks? Are they not? It's a bit of a mix or what?
Yeah, most of the time, probably about 98% of the time, yeah. I'm seeing people wearing masks, which is fantastic. I wear a mask pretty much everywhere, and I've got a friend who cannot, for medical reasons, wear a mask, so I wear it for her. But at the moment I just have a cloth mask, but I have a filter in mine, but I think I need an upgrade. I might put my cloth mask over the top though, because I quite like the pattern on it. It's quite stylish. Gotta look fashionable as well at the same time as being safe, you know.
Of course. 4:20, the panel. RNZ National. And now to rising inflation, which is putting the pressure on many New Zealand households. And just in today, the AA has warned petrol prices could hit $3 a litre in 2022. So how do we manage these escalating costs? Independent economist Tony Alexander has just surveyed his 25,000 strong basis and newsletter to his subscribers to get their thoughts, and they've come back in droves. He's with us now to... well, share some of his crowdsourced tips. Kia ora, Tony.
Yeah, hi there, Wallace.
Yeah, first up, what's pushing inflation up?
Oh, a whole range of things. A lot of people have left the labour force around the world, so wage costs are going up. Interruptions to the supply chain, so shipping costs have, well, gone through the roof, quite frankly. Lots of factories not operating at the same time around the world, so raw materials prices have gone up. There's also insurance, which seems to go up every year, local authority rates, and of course housing costs, rents are feeding through as well. It's like a lot of stuff has come together all at once to push up consumer prices.
So here's the deal. Usually wages grow around 2% more than the cost of living every year. Now the opposite is happening.
Well, yeah, it's definitely going to be the opposite. The wages measure I look at has increased almost 4% over the past year. Inflation is 4.9%, but in a week or so's time, we're going to get an update on that. And the inflation rate or increase in people's cost of living is going to end up somewhere around about 6%. And so basically, if you are not getting a wage rise of 8%, you're falling behind average income increases.
An 8% wage rise?
Yeah, not really very realistic, apart from a few people. Now, having said that, of course, what a lot of Kiwis are going to realise is, well, they can actually get phenomenally more than that if they just hop across the ditch. And that's one reason I think that once the borders are sort of open up and flowing reasonably freely, we're going to have maybe a generation of the younger people hop across to Australia, lower cost of living, higher wages, lower house prices as well. So that's a story for later in the year.
All right, share an example or two. What are your subscribers saying to you?
Yeah, the most popular one was on the coffees, basically. I mean, it's lovely to go out, have a coffee, take away, or at the cafe, etc. But it adds up every day, just kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. And one person noted it could cost about $7,000 a year. So yeah, they suggested that. They suggested, you know, cutting back on eating out, takeaways generally, do baking, you know, for your kids' lunches, etc. And a lot of people were also suggesting ways to make some extra income. Don't just leave your money sitting in the bank doing essentially nothing, going rapidly backwards. Put it to use in some better investments out there. And I had a few of the golden oldies ones there about using sunlight soap in the shaker. For washing, well, basically everything they were suggesting. So left that one in there as a suggestion for people to follow.
All right, Zoe.
Yeah, where should we invest our money this year if we want to try and make our money grow?
Oh, I am not allowed to answer that. It would be illegal
yes.
for me, in fact, to answer that.
I was going to say, where's your disclosure statement, Tony?
Damn it.
Thanks for that.
Go on, Tony. No, I'm just joking. Well, I'm just joking.
My answer when I do my talks around the country, and many people ask this all the time, is only invest in what you understand. Because if you invest in something you don't understand, you don't know why it goes up and down, the first time it's going to go down, you're going to sell out of it and crystallize a loss. And it could just be that that's what it does every Easter or something like that. So invest only in what you understand.
Yeah, but generally speaking, generally without giving any advice, I mean, this sort of environment is going to push people into things like equities over. I mean, returns on fixed return investments have been so almost worthless for so long anyway. But this is only going to push people further into shares and things like that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, definitely. And that's something we can see underway for another reason as well. We've seen house prices increase about 45% from their pandemic levels, and people have now got very unbalanced portfolios. They're overinvested in housing, and so what we're starting to see at the margin is people sell down one, two, hey, maybe all their investment properties, and they're moving across into maybe it's equities, maybe it's into commercial property and managed funds, more into the KiwiSaver. So there is sort of a broad diversification phase, which will probably intensify this year when a lot of the property investors start figuring out what the tax implications actually are of the changes announced.
I can see the ramifications. I mean, that's quite a figure. You need an 8% wage rise. One economist said the 20% of households with the lowest incomes have tended to see the largest living cost increases, and the richest 20% have seen the smallest increases. So here you've got a bit of an inequity problem right there, Tony, as well.
Yep, that's exactly right. And if we look overseas, one of the themes that the sort of geopolitical analysts are looking at is that we're seeing strong inflationary pressures in a lot of countries. Authoritarian regimes are coming under pressure because the inflation rates are high, living costs, fuel costs are rising for people in, you know, Eastern European countries, this sort of thing. And the people are starting to get a little bit antsy about it. So there's all sort of different groups and ramifications from a high inflation period. And we're all guessing at the moment, and I'm prepared to say it is just a guess, when we actually start to see inflation go back towards the 2% level. That's not this year. Hopefully, maybe it's going to be the latter part of next year. But for the interim, yeah, people on the lowest incomes, they have the least wage bargaining ability, they need to join a union, they're the ones who tend to suffer most.
Independent economist Tony Alexander. Kia ora, Tony. Thanks for your time. It is 26 past four. The panel, Zoe George and Liam here with me this afternoon, and lovely to be with you. Here we have one, and I've seen this a lot. I don't know about you two, but I'm a retail worker, and every day have to serve people wearing their masks under their nose. Asking them to pull it up is awkward, and it's not appreciated. What could a national strategy do about such relaxed attitude? It's a problem in the small town I live in. Thank you very much for your text there. Well, to this, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern broke her silence over allegations her fiancé, Clark Gave, had tried to get a pharmacist to give his friends rapid antigen tests in contradiction to health advice. Here she is.
Look, everything that is to be said has been. He's made an apology, and I think that really covers everything.
And Gayford later apologised via a statement from his manager. Mr Gayford was rung by a friend about rapid antigen testing and was put on speakerphone while the person was in a pharmacy. An editorial in the Otago Daily Times has addressed this issue, called "The Political Spouse Role is Not Easy." So I just sort of might throw this to panel and see what they think of it. What do you think, Zoe? I mean, spokesperson Chris Bishop, this is national spokesperson, calls the incident where Clark Gayford allegedly tried to get a pharmacist to give his musician mates rapid antigen tests in contradiction to health advice deeply inappropriate. How did you see the scenario?
Oh, well, I think that it's deeply inappropriate that his friends called him to try and get help for something like this. So why are they not being, their actions being questioned? What did they think they would achieve by doing that? And I, part of me feels kind of sorry for him. Yes, he is the Prime Minister's partner, but he is also a person in his own right and his own self.
So you see him as a bystander?
Yeah, partly. Yes, I do. I think that if he tried to pull the "do you know who I am" thing, then that would be a different story. But he has apologised, and I don't know. I have more questions for his friends more than anything else.
All right, Liam, what do you make of that? Is this just a political storm in a teacup?
No, I mean, look, it's a hard one, because I think there's a really good norm about trying to leave the families of politicians out of it. But on the other hand, you can say that, you can criticise his friends for ringing him up, but I mean, why did he take the call? Why did he argue with the pharmacist on speakerphone? I mean, if it wasn't about throwing his weight around, why did he do it? He's not the ombudsman of pharmacists. He doesn't, we have these norms about leaving families out of it, but it relies on a little bit on families, keeping their heads down a little bit, or at least exercising more common sense. And I'm sure he's been punished more than anything by his bride to be. No punishment in the media is going to be as bad as how annoyed the Prime Minister is with him. I think it is a problem. I don't shrug it off quite so lightly. I mean, I think that if it happened from Bill English's wife or John Key's wife, we would be people would be just as upset as they are now, if not more so in some quarters. So, yeah, it did disturb me a little bit. I did think it was a valid news story and a valid source of criticism.
Okay, you want to respond to that, Zoe?
Yeah, I mean, partly I agree. I guess as well, if my friends call, I will answer the phone. And as a journalist, I do ask lots of questions. So I would be asking a question and going, okay, so tell me about this, or what about this? But I'd be asking questions back to the friends and going, well, what do you think that this is appropriate to do that? And, you're my friend and we have boundaries. Yeah.
Don't put me on speakerphone so I can tell the pharmacist how to be a pharmacist. you're just not getting around it. It's just inappropriate. It was just
why am I on speakerphone? why was it on speakerphone?
So was Clark just naive, Zoe? He should have said, why am I on speakerphone?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to know if I'm on speakerphone. I don't put my friends on speakerphone unless I tell them. I think it's just common courtesy.
Is it a case of getting better friends? Is it a case of getting better mates? What friends put you on speakerphone?
Yeah, without asking. It's okay to be on speakerphone if they ask, or say, hey, I've put you on speakerphone, then you can think about what you're going to say. Because I think what you say on speakerphone is slightly different to what you say when you're not.
Liam?
It wasn't much of an apology either. If you read the apology, it was kind of like a sorry for the confusion thing, as if like he's sorry that he got the advice wrong, rather than sorry about the actual optics of weighing in like that, you know, and being called in to sort it out, sort of. So, I mean, I don't want to go on and on about it. Look, it's not the end of the world. It's not hanging your fence, but it's just so inappropriate.
The editorial in the Otago Daily Times kind of widened the issue out, saying that, look, being a political spouse in New Zealand used to be quite clear-cut, that you would, in a sense, be seen and not so much heard, but not so much these days in the era of instant communication. And I thought that was an interesting sort of point, Zoe.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone is so accessible these days. Mm. They've got our cell phones, they've got social media. You can post anything and you're visual, right? So I think that role of being the first spouse or whatever you want to call it has changed quite considerably, particularly in the last sort of 15 years, 10 years since the advent of iPhones and smartphones. But yeah, I would not want that job.
I've started calling it the Prime Minister's consort, because it sort of has that, you know, it's a bit, you know, we're a monarchy, so we don't have a first man or a first lady, so we have a consort like Prince Philip. But the I think it's a bit of a unique situation, this one. It's, you know, the difference here is that Clark Gayford, unlike the spouses or the consorts of the past, he's been a media figure in his own right for a long time. Okay, so he's obviously somebody who's comfortable in the limelight, who's, you know, sought it as part of his career. And so, you know, obviously he has a bigger media presence just, you know, by default. You know, he's sponsored by Holden. He's doing a TV show for TVNZ. He's going to be in the media and the press more often than a regular husband or wife of a prime minister. And so, you know, to an extent, I wonder if there's a risk of reading too much into it. It might be a bit of a unique situation.
Sure. Someone says, I feel sorry for Clark with friends like his. Who needs enemies? And Victoria says, I don't think they were his friends. Stuart says, so Clark Gayford is not allowed mates? Another one says, oh, come on. This is clearly on Gayford if he spoke to the pharmacist. Thank you very much for your feedback this afternoon. 27 to 5, you're on the panel, RNZ National, Wallace Chapman, and we are with Liam here and Zoe George.